I'm Sharky's Goon. Today, Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 4, Chapter 12, The Siege. With the ship in bad shape, Mando heads back to Corvus to get the ship repaired. He runs into Cara Dune and Carl Weathers, and they're like, yo, we need your help with an Imperial base. And what do you know, the Mando goes off on yet another side mission. Goon, what did you think of The Siege?
Another strong, solid episode. I don't feel like any of these episodes have been filler either. I feel like it's been building. It's not giving you too much, but at the same time, it's not just stalling you like that one episode when Mando was hanging out in that village where he thought that he might take off the helmet and stay. It just felt strong. It continued on the story that they left from season one with Moff Gideon. It's just great writing. I was shocked to see that Carl Weathers directed this.
Yeah.
I don't know how much he's directed in the past, but it was another – it was pretty solid of him for doing it. So Let me stop there.
Did Carl Weathers give actor Carl Weathers the direction to dial it down a little bit? Because he didn't have that whole, Mando, I'm speaking larger than life, that he had in season one. He was a little more – less over the top.
I noticed that too, and I think he might have, but I also think – it's the same character but with different circumstances, so he was able to change. When he was in charge of the – not really in charge of the planet to begin with, and he was being over the top, that was him selling it to all the bounty hunters and everybody else around of what kind of a character he is. Now he's a little more focused. He's – him and Kara are trying to write the system, you know, write the planet, make it more livable. If you looked at – even the people that live there, they're brighter colors. They seem like they're enjoying their life. They even have a statue to IG that sacrificed himself, IG-11, in the background.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, when they're walking into the school, there's a statue of IG-11 in the back.
Oh, wow. I got to go back and watch that. All right, cool.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a totally different planet, you know, a different town where they're still having problems, but it's not like – it's not like Mos Eisley, you know, times 1,000. It's more like, hey, we're the Western community that got rid of the outlaws. Now we're trying to rebuild. And the guys that were, you know, not black or white, but were gray are trying to trend more to the white side.
Yeah, we've got Horatio Sands now has a job. We've got a school, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, they're trying to make it into a – quote-unquote, livable community.
All right, so the gang has to head off to the conveniently nearby base where we see maybe some cloning is going on, and we find out a little more about why everybody wants Baby Yoda, and he's got good blood that they need for technobabble reasons.
Well, if you look about it, they mentioned the M count, which was the midichlorians, but they won't use midichlorians because people hate that word.
What are midichlorians?
They're supposed to be microscopic life forms that are basically the force. And the force, when they say the force is alive, they really mean the force is alive.
That was like one of the worst line deliveries ever in the original trilogy. I distracted you. All right, so we're there and cloning, and we see some at some point in the episode, we see some shadowy figures that I'm not sure who I was supposed to think that was. Maybe think it was somebody, and I don't know. What do you think?
All right, so I'm going to get back to where you said how convenient that base was. Where do you think all the stormtroopers and Moff Gideon came from in the last episode of the first season? They just showed up out of nowhere, and they're on the Outer Rims, and Outer Rims is where was the Empire doing all their off the book stuff out in the Outer Rims. So of course that could be one of those places that have all the villainous scum there. Who's going to be looking for a base out in the Outer Rim? So the rebels aren't going out there. So those shadowy figures that were in the tanks that you were talking about are clones, but do we know what kind of clones? We don't. We don't know if they're going to eventually tie into being Snoke, Palpatine, Or if you look at the end of the episode, you have the Dark Troopers there. You have the Dark Trooper, you know, uniforms or armor. I don't know if you know what the Dark Troopers are, but they're basically clones or meat slabs of people that they cybernetically enhance with the armor and basically have, quote unquote, unkillable, unfeeling stormtroopers.
Oh, okay. I didn't know because I was looking at it and I saw some armor that was black, and the only armor that was black that comes with a helmet reminded me of somebody, and I'm like, they're not going to do that. So, okay. What are they? Dark Troopers? I'm in.
Dark Troopers. And there's like, it was from a video game. I forgot which video game it was, but it might have been an N64 video game, but that's where the Dark Troopers first popped up. And they've been in a comic or one of the you know, novels along the way.
You know, I know we were all upset about wiping out the original canon, but the way that they've handled the reintroducing things so it all fits together a little better, they've done a really, really good job.
They have, and they've cherry-picked the good stuff, what they want, stuff that was too convoluted they got rid of. Now imagine if Star Trek had showrunners like this.
Yeah, oh, don't. As you know, don't even start me on that. But yeah, you know, Star Trek, here I go. Star Trek is just trapped under its own canon. And you and I have talked on the side. All I need to do is go, you know what? All that happened. It's 2021. We're making a TV series. It's Kirk, Spock, McCoy. It looks like this. And just get back to the basics and start over and reintroduce things as you want. They kind of was sort of doing that in the JJ films before they just totally screwed up the second one with the complete, utter waste of the Khan character. That's not how you do it. But you could have just started over and been like, okay, let's run into a Gorn. But we can go off on Star Trek some other day. Star Wars, you guys know how to do it.
That's why I wanted you to go off on Star Trek for a little bit right there, because you have the good with too much canon. And just like you said, Disney, you know, when they threw out everything out the window except for, you know, stuff that was on screen and, you know, the cartoons and everything, and cherry picked out of the stuff they didn't like and brought the good stuff out. That's to show you how two franchises can be run really, really well and really, really crappy.
Yeah. I mean, you just mentioned like Thrawn. He comes out of the original expanded universe novels that got wiped away. They brought him back. It's a great character. Let's use it.
Exactly. And, you know, now you have another character that you can, you know, how they act. You don't have to act them the same way or do the same storyline with them. But at least you have other stuff that you can do. And it's not always Emperor, Darth Vader, Kylo Ren.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, it's so, we've all lived so long that we're all like, enough with the Skywalker saga, but like, enough with the Skywalker saga. There's so much to do. Just go do it. And like, that's what Star Wars Mandalorian is doing well, and Star Trek is not. Star Trek would just be like, oh, look, it's the Skywalker's cousin. And these guys just get it. They get it.
Yep. I always keep saying about Favreau, people keep forgetting he's the one that really kicked off the Marvel Universe with Iron Man and the way he crafted that movie. I have all the faith in the world with him with Star Wars. They should just go, look, you and Filoni, you guys are in charge, and, you know, forever. Just, you know, you're the godfathers. You're the ones that oversee all our projects.
I mean, Favreau is like the Theo Epstein of geekdom, right? Theo Epstein took the Red Sox, then the Cubs to World Series after big droughts. I mean, this guy figured out how to do Marvel. Think of all the awful, like, bad versions of Marvel that had previously existed, and like, has Star Wars completely on track. I know there are some detractors who are like, I don't like that. Star Wars is doing really well right now. Just great job.
Well, just with Marvel, Iron Man was a B/C character.
No one cared about Iron Man. Nobody cared about that character.
Nobody cared about him. And he helped build 22 episodes of 22 movies into the MCU, where everybody's dying to see a superhero movie now, and transform basically the whole film business, because studios are trying to recreate what they've done with universes and the deeper world building of each each thing, and it transforms perfectly over to Star Wars.
And let's talk about the inverse. The rankings were X-Men were king, Fantastic Four were the legacy, and the Avengers was the third thing that you read when you had finished everything else. No one cared about the Avengers. And now, you know, you get bad Fantastic Four films. No one cares about them now. And you got hit and miss X-Men films, and their stock went down. And now everything is Avengers. Go back and tell yourself in 1986, everyone's going to be into the Avengers. No one will believe you.
Nope, not the Avengers, not Doctor Strange, not the Fantastic Four. I mean, the Fantastic Four were the legacy, but I read very few Fantastic Four comics back then. And it's just like now, who would have thought that a character that Favreau and Filoni created, the Mandalorian, would be the breakout star with the child as the high point of Star Wars, even with three sequels, you know, with the new trilogy.
So is this, too, another example of, like, the Star Trek writers would have just made this series called Boba Fett and then been trapped by the canon? So by, like, taking half a step to the right and being like, it's like Boba Fett, but it's not, you're just free, right? Is that the smart move here?
That's the smart move, and you just were able to touch different canon points, but at the same time, you're not beholden to canon, so which is great, and that's why these episodes have been working and this season so strong. And I really like this episode with the way it felt like a Star Wars movie episode where they're running on in the base. The base felt like a Death Star or an Imperial cruiser, and they're running away from stormtroopers. It had the nods of the stormtroopers standing over the lava, which made you think of A New Hope when Luke and Leia were swinging over the gap to get to the other side.
They totally did that again.
So, you know, but it still felt fresh where it made you think of it and made you fond of that moment, but it wasn't like, oh my God, they're repeating it again. It was different enough that it was fine where Mando is like, all right, I'm going to kill you. I'm getting the hell out of here. And he flies up the lava, you know, basically the volcano crater, lands, takes out two more stormtroopers, and then you don't see him again. You don't know what happens to him. And then the whole episode then focuses onto the three background characters, the supporting characters of, you know, Dune, Grav, and I forgot what Horatio Sands' character's name is. But then you're worried about them getting taken out by the TIE fighters.
The TIE fighters were awesome. I love the way they make an X when they're on the ground, and then they kind of take TIE fighter shape when they take off. That looks so badass.
I love it that they actually have the, like, that's their landing gear. And I also love the fact that it looks realistic. That's like something they've done really well, where when they're flying around, it feels like you're watching, you know, Top Gun, or you're watching real like firefights going on, dogfights going on in the sky. And you got the contrails behind the Razor Crest. You got contrails behind the TIE fighters. And it just feels like it could be a real world thing where you're watching this.
Yeah, all the sci-fi of it, you know, if you accept that there's faster than light drives, and, you know, almost all sci-fi uses that, you know, it switches and gears, and, you know, the ships aren't like, it's not too much tech, right? It just feels like, you know, I've got my famous 1992 Honda Civic, and it feels like, you know, the spaceship version of that.
Like, just think about, like, when the last TIE fighter and the Razor Crest are going at it with each other, and the Razor Crest shoots straight up, and then it pivots itself, and then starts shooting down. That's like moves I've seen in combat footage from, like, World War II and from the Gulf War and stuff like that. And it's just amazing that they were able to, you know, CGI something like that and make it look so real and not hokey. And it's amazing that it's not a clean, you know, clean silver ship from, like, the Phantom Menace, where it was too much tech.
Well, also, too, Star Trek right now, too much tech. This show Discovery, where you've got the ship where you can go anywhere you want in an instant, and now they're in the 31st, 32nd century. It's too much tech, and too much tech ruins storytelling. You're better off having, you know, a ship that doesn't work so well, and you're forced to go off on side missions rather than just be like, oh yeah, you know, let's go on the holodeck and imagine something and problem solve.
Well, that was the charm about the Millennium Falcon too. You know, you always had to worry about it breaking down, and when it broke down, you wouldn't have had that great those great asteroid chases, or you wouldn't have had that great, you know, asteroid worm coming out after the Millennium Falcon. You know, it's great with stuff like that happening. And this Star Wars show gets it, and it's like, let's see what made the original trilogy great, and let's just expand on it.
Yeah, you know, you go back to Solo, it's like we've all had our, you know, 3 a.m. wacky adventure where somebody knows a guy. So if you go back to Star Wars, the wizard knew a guy, and all right, let's go meet the guy, and we're meeting the guy, and we're at this dive bar, and who is this guy? And really, this is the guy we're going to trust? Yeah, no, he's good, I know him. You know, you've had some version of that in your life, and then you know, you get on the guy's ship, and it's not the most kick-ass ship, and you wind up wondering, what the hell are we even doing here? And you're off on an adventure. It's kind of real.
Yeah, and it just feels good, and it feels like being home. That's what's great about this whole Mandalorian show, is that you feel like you're home in Star Wars, without, you know, going over the same stuff like over and over. It's great seeing the Jawas. It's great seeing the Sand People. It's great seeing, you know, the original Stormtroopers. And there's reasons why all these people and all these characters are still around, and they're not just thrown in just to have them thrown in.
Yep. I also want to talk about Titus Welliver as the Imperial captain. Really nice job in that role. Didn't do too much. Embodied the character really well. It was great to see him. He looked the part. I really liked that casting. I really liked the performance.
Yeah, that they've nailed it with all the cast additions that they've done with all the casting, and it's great that how they have a role. You know, this person's going to be great for the role. It's just like I think her name's Katie O'Brien. She's at the end going into Moff Gideon, where she's like, "Hey, something happened. Blah blah blah. Well, did you put the tracker on it? Oh yeah, we did." She's been in a lot of sci-fi stuff now. She's been in Z Nation, The Walking Dead. She's been on Arrow, Black. I think she was in Black Lightning on CW. And like, they're taking people and actors that you could tell are gonna be due for bigger things, but they're in like smaller properties. And the smaller properties, like, you could just tell that they have, like we were saying before about, you know, certain characters that you need the acting chops, and they have the acting chops. And if they had a bigger property, they'd be Grinning, and I have a feeling that her character isn't just going to be a throwaway character. I think she's going to end up being more important in the show.
Yeah, some people online seem to think this was a backdoor pilot for a Carl Weathers spinoff series. There's so many rumors about Mando spinoffs. I'll take them all, especially if they're only 8 episodes. And, you know, do there have to be rules? You know, can something be 3 episodes or 20 episodes?
My problem with the Carl Weathers and like Cara Dune, I don't think those characters are strong enough not to have Mando around. I think they're great supporting characters, but they're not characters that can have their own shows. The Bill Burr crew, I think those characters could have their own show, because since they're traveling and doing you know, stuff in the Outer Rim or flying around pulling heist, I think they could have a great heist show. The Carl Weathers, he's just on the planet. What's he doing? Fending off more stormtroopers? You know, people are going too crazy with all these rumors. I can see, I can see, like, you know, with the Asako, you know, Snips. Yeah, Snips coming up soon. That, you know, that could be a backdoor, because why would you cast Rosario Dawson for 1 or 2 episodes of Mandalorian?
I could see a Carl Weathers office comedy with Horatio Sanz in the Dwight Schrute role. I'm not sure that's good Star Wars, but I think that's what you'd get there.
I think that's what you get there, but I don't think it lends itself to a great Star Wars show that's going to be on Disney Plus.
No, you know, just take those characters out for a drive every couple episodes. I think that's good enough, right?
Yeah, totally. They're great supporting characters. You know, they could be in 2/3 of a show where Mando just pops up, but there's no way that they should have their own television episodic show.
Now, the Bill Burr crew, I feel like that would be a better version of what we're getting for the Clone Wars spinoff with the, like, A-Team clones that I don't really care about. I'll watch because it's Star Wars, but I've never enjoyed any of that clone stuff. I know they have different haircuts and tattoos and stuff, but, like, I can never follow in my brain which character is which. I'd rather see the Bill Burr A-Team than the clone A-Team.
Oh, 100%. There's no reason to have a clone A-Team. What are you going to do? They're just going to have them keeping their helmets on with the different markings on the helmets. And every once in a while, they're going to take off the helmet for so you see his face.
And then, yeah, I'm Mohawk guy. I'm half cyborg guy. Like, but you all sound the same. Like, I don't like it.
I don't like it. And you know, I love the way Clone Wars was, you know, story wise. But I was never a big Clone Wars fan because of the clones.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like it. Just yeah.
You know. So will I watch it? I'd watch it, but I'd probably not watch it as fully and as tightly as I do with Mando. And did you see in Mando the crew member in the last episode? No. There's a crew member that pops up by accident wearing jeans and a t-shirt in one of the scenes where Carl Weathers and Cara Dune or Gina Carano are running down the hallway. He like
– Oh, you mean like a film crew member?
A film crew member, green shirt and jeans.
Maybe that's a guy. Maybe, you know, he's green jeans, lives in this universe. Why can't a guy in a t-shirt and jeans? You accept a frog lady and talking robots. Why can't a guy have a shirt and jeans?
Because it wasn't tweaked enough to be a Star Wars costume.
Look, we've seen the HoloVision. Like, there are people making these TV shows. You think when Chewbacca's dad is watching the Holo TV, somebody's making that stuff. There are film crew guys, and he's one of them. He just happened to be in town. That's how they dress.
They use droids for that.
No, I'm retconning this. This is a legit thing. I want a spinoff about film crew guys in the Star Wars universe.
Or actually, what you could do is a documentary like that YouTube show, Cops, when it was Troopers.
Yep.
You could do it like that if you want to retcon it.
Dude, if I worked at Lucasfilm, I would be working film crew guy into the next iteration of the Star Wars Encyclopedia. I would totally retcon that as like a thing. Like, there's a reason that guy's there.
It's a film crew guy and he just has a camera for a head.
No, he's just a guy. He's a guy like you, and that's where he lives, and he works on HoloVision. Why can't that happen?
We'll see. We'll see if it happens.
All right. You are the Mando shill, so I'll give my score first. As much as we've talked about this episode, as much as I liked it, of the four, it was my fourth most favorite episode of the season. I'm going to give it an 8 because I'm being honest. At one point during the episode, I kind of zoned out for like a minute, and that hadn't happened in any of the other three. So it was great. The other three were even more great. I'll give this an 8 out of 10. I might not be the Mando show.
I'm only going to give it an 8.5. And the reason I'm giving the half a score higher than you is because of the opening when Mando is messing with the child, trying to get him to repair the ship, and the kid
that was great.
And the kid's just not listening. And somebody, I forgot who said, it's like dealing with tech support, where tech support's trying to tell you to do something. You're like, I'm doing the exact opposite.
All right. Well, you once again are the Mando shill. Shark and Goon will return.